Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Usually on Friday, it's our week in review, but today we'll look back at the year that was 2018 in law and politics, starting with the year in immigration and the president's consistent border message.
A country without borders is not a country at all. We need borders. We need security. We need safety. We have to take care of our people.
The Supreme Court upholds the travel ban.
We just have to know who's coming here. The ruling shows that all of the attacks from the media and the Democrat politicians are wrong, and they turned out to be very wrong.
While Nancy Pelosi says it's the president's policies on immigration and family separations that's wrong.
The Democrats have taken full responsibility for securing our borders, but we don't think that we have to put children in cages to do it. And the president is either not knowing, not caring, delusional, and denial about his own policies being outside the circle of civilized human behavior.
The president doubles down on the tough talk.
Because many of those people, a percentage, a big, fairly big percentage of those people are criminals. And they want to come into our country. And they're criminals. And it's not happening on my watch. It's not going to happen.
While at a Boston rally on immigration, Senator Elizabeth Warren says we have to reflect our values.
The president's deeply immoral actions have made it obvious we need to rebuild our immigration system from top to bottom, starting by replacing ICE with something that reflects our morality and values.
Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker, himself a Republican, rebukes the president's policies as cruel.
I said 2 weeks ago that I did not support the decision of the Trump administration to separate kids from their families. And I think it's cruel and inhumane. And we told the National Guard to hold steady and to not go down to the border, period. So we won't be supporting that initiative.
And then, an about-face, as the president loses his stomach for his own administration's policy.
So we're going to have strong, very strong borders, but we're going to keep the families together. I didn't like the sight or the feeling of families being separated.
This month, a testy Oval Office exchange on the promised border wall.
If we don't get what we want, one way or the other, whether it's through you, through a military, through anything you want to call, I will shut down the government.
Okay, absolutely. Fair enough.
And
we
I am
disagree.
Proud, and I'll
we
tell
disagree.
You what, I am proud to shut down the government for border security.
What a year it has been. With me in studio to help us make sense of this is former federal judge Nancy Gertner. She's a senior lecturer at Harvard Law School and WBUR's legal analyst. Hello, Judge Gertner.
Good to be here.
Glad to have you. Also with us is Charlie Chippio, a senior fellow at the Pioneer Institute and head of Chippio Strategies. Hi, Charlie.
Hello.
And last but not least, Tom Keen, former Boston City Councilor and regular contributor to WBUR's own Cognoscenti. Hi there, Tom. How are you?
Pleasure to be here.
Hey, listeners, we want to hear from you, too. What about this year in law and politics? What stood out to you this year? Immigration, the midterms, local politics? Everything's on the table. What is our current government shutdown, which is nearing its one-week mark, portend for 2019? Call us. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Now, Judge Gertner, I'm going to start with you and what we heard at the top, which was quite the stroll down memory lane of some big moments in immigration policy this year. What were you thinking as you listened to the litany?
Well, you know, I was thinking about what Trump says about the judges that are striking down his policies. And he talks about, you know, whether they are Clinton judges or Obama judges. And over again, I think that actually it doesn't matter who the judge is. The fact of the matter is that what he has tried to implement is not even close to the zone of constitutionality. That's why he keeps on losing with respect to the asylum ban, with respect to DACA. There are are actually ways to have implemented his policies that would have required, you know, deliberation and you know, conferring with other agencies, not tweeting an executive order. And so that's why there's been just chaos. What he has tried, what he has attempted, has been resoundingly struck down. It doesn't matter who the judge was.
So that's really the case, that regardless of who appointed, he's just universally
with a few exceptions,
right.
very few exceptions.
But I think just as an aside, one of the things that would have in another normal year have gotten more attention on that very point was Justice Roberts actually coming out and publicly rebuking him. That was... if not unprecedented, it's certainly close to it.
Well, part of one of many moments, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, Tom, let me ask you. One thing that did get upheld, which by the Supreme Court, no less, was the travel ban, right, this summer. So it's a half a year later. In your view, what's the impact of that decision?
Well, I'm not sure I feel safer. I mean, you know, this is right. This is the whole idea was somehow with the travel ban on countries that, let's face it, were pretty much Muslim. And it seemed to a lot of us this was kind of an overtly religious discrimination here. I don't think we're any safer at this point. In fact, one can argue that some of the moves that the Trump administration's now making, say with regard to Syria, are actually the kinds of things that will make us less safe.
Now, Judge Gertner, let's come back to what Tom just said, because it is 5 minutes. 5 minutes. Time moves fast with
yes,
this.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
It is 5 months later, and I think there are still a lot of people saying, wait a minute, how was that not discriminatory? So what was the fine line there that didn't get crossed?
Well, first of all, you have to recognize that it took three attempts to get the travel ban right. So when the president says, you know, the Supreme Court is upholding him, it took him three times to, because it was so blatant, the first order was something that he basically tweeted out without, you know, consulting anyone. And it was so clearly 100% a Muslim ban. It even dealt with green card holders. I mean, this is, he is so sloppy and over the top in what he does. So it finally took three times for the Supreme Court to say that there was a basis for what he did. I see that, I mean, as a sort of give him one for the team. Upholding that, I'm not so sure he's going to have the same track record with respect to the other cases that are going up through the courts.
Yeah.
All right.
Presidents have an awful lot of authority when it comes to matters of immigration, national security. And I think you're right, which is if there's almost a rational basis there, then they're going to give him a pass.
Which is why the decisions around the country, no matter who the judge is, throwing out the various immigration orders are so interesting, because you do defer on national security. You do defer on immigration. You do defer in emergency. And these judges are saying this president is going too far. I'm not going to defer to an executive that is chaotic and really acting outside of Constitution.
So we've actually got a caller on the line who wanted to call in to talk about the travel ban in particular. So Chris from Somerville, welcome to Radio Boston. You're on the line.
Yeah, thanks so much. You know, I just wanted to make a comment about the travel ban that I think there were some underlying issues on documentation, and that these countries really weren't practicing immigration or a visa type of documentation, and it wasn't really necessarily Muslim. I think even under the Obama administration, some of these countries were cited for having lax documentation rules on passports and things like that, and that always seems to get lost on the liberal media. So I'd really like to ask you guys to comment on that.
So Chris is saying, hey, hang on a minute. There were some issues here that this was meant to address. Charlie, let's start with you. What's your reaction to Chris's call?
I don't see that being the case. I mean, it just seems very strange. There are plenty of other countries that have documentation problems, yet this one focused exclusively on Muslim countries. And the fact that if you go back to, as Judge Gertner said, to his original order and the one he talked about during the campaign, I mean, he didn't really try to be anything but overt about that. It was very clear what he was trying.
The intentions were very clear.
Yeah, I mean, if you were to go back and sort of look for the legislative intent on this one, it wouldn't be hard to find.
Wouldn't be hard to see.
And it had nothing to do with documents. That's certainly true.
Right.
And if it did have to do with documents, then the right order would be, here's what you need to do in order to be allowed to
fix it.
Right. Yeah,
Judge Gertner, go ahead.
No, I think that's right. Had he come into office and they were going to look at those countries whose procedures leave something to be desired, we're going to do a report, we're going to study that. At the end of that period of time, we'll issue an order banning those countries that have not yet, immigrants from those countries that have not yet met these standards. That would have been a rational process. Instead, what he did was off the seat of his pants. and clearly racist.
All right, callers, we are still ready for you. It's 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm going to shift gears a little bit. We just had this, you know, heartbreaking Christmas Eve news that an 8-year-old boy from Guatemala died in U.S. custody just before the midnight hour from Christmas Eve to Christmas Day. And it was the second death of a young child in detention in less than a month. What? What is going on? Anyone?
Right. Well, I mean, it is said that we were not prepared for the numbers of children and family that are coming across the border. The detention facilities at the border have been largely for adult males and not for children and families. So we were not prepared. And then if the cause of this wave of immigration are the conditions in Honduras and Guatemala, the horrible conditions that allow families to say, I'd rather risk this horrible journey with the possibility of getting into the U.S. rather than risk death in the countries that I come from, we have to address what the cause of this is, and we haven't.
Yeah.
And shutting the border isn't going to do anything.
But I think it's even in a way it's even more basic than that. This is sort of a microcosm of Trump and the way that he operates. You know, this is a political move to say, you know, we're gonna close off immigration. It's a great political move for me. And as is always the case with him, it's the big proclamation. There's no thought to any details. There's no thought to unintended consequences. And this is what we end up with.
So this is an interesting space to me. And Tom, I'll turn to you this on. The head of Department of Homeland Security, Kirstjen Nielsen, she basically blamed defective U.S. immigration policy for these deaths of these children. Who actually does bear responsibility in your mind, and what does it say about us as a country that this has happened?
So I kind of take a step back, and the step back I take is America. One of America's great virtues for so long has been that it has immigrants coming into it, that they enliven the country, they make it more dynamic. I think almost all of us in some fashion can trace our roots back to immigrants unless we're Native Americans. And certainly I'm Irish, for example. And I know that, you know, my forebears came over to a country that sometimes did not welcome them.
Mm-hmm.
Really sometimes did not. But at least there was an immigration policy that allowed folks to come in. The flaw in our immigration policy is that we have now turned our shoulders to people who want to come to the United States. And we make it almost impossible for them to come in, thereby encouraging a system where you have essentially lawlessness. But the flaw is that we are not welcoming people to come in.
Tom makes such a good point here, because that is absolutely true. You know, objectively, it is so clear that that immigration has been such a dramatic net positive in the history of this country. And it's true. We talk about taking your eye off the ball. We have just completely lost sight of that basic fact here.
Well, and not only that, if you're concerned, as Trump is, about illegal, you know, ne'er-do-wells coming to the country, which, first of all, is not the majority of the people that are coming in, then maybe the money for the wall should have gone into enhanced, you know, administrative procedures to review asylum. Maybe the money for the wall should go into, you know, people that would be screening in a meaningful way. There are also unintended consequences. What are the consequences to Mexico of shutting our borders and winding up with this constituency now on that side? I mean, Mexico is not doing fabulously well either. So, I mean, this is an incredibly benighted, insular policy, which, again, he does off the seat of his pants.
And the other piece to think about, too, in terms of why are we now turning our back on immigrants? I mean, let's face it. It's because the complexion of the immigrants that are now coming in is different. And so a lot of what you are seeing here is a fear of the country becoming browner, of the country becoming looking different than what people think proper Americans should look like.
Right. But so that's not new, right? I mean,
right.
No.
Right.
In the old days,
but now you have a president
like
who really buys into it.
Right.
Well, and there's
right.
this interesting combination, right? So now we've juxtaposed or bundled up or tangled up, depending on what you want to call it. You know, the wall, this shutdown of immigration, and this shutdown of the government. You know, President Trump tweeted just today, we will be forced to close the southern border entirely if the obstructionist Democrats don't give us the money to finish the wall and also change the ridiculous immigration laws that our country is saddled with. Hard to believe there was a Congress and president who would approve, exclamation point. We've got actually a caller on the line. We've got Steve from Dorchester, and he wanted to talk about the shutdown. Let's hear what Steve has to say. Hi, Steve. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you very much. I was a little surprised when I heard that, not surprised that the shutdown was going to take place, but that 400,000 government employees were going to be affected with only 25% of the government shut down. That's astronomical. As far as I can see, the shutdown, except for, I guess, the workers that are affected, the direct workers with pay, checks are going out, mail's being delivered. I don't know if it's as effective as people think or the media is putting it up to be.
So, Steve, thanks for your call. I appreciate that. You know, guest Steve is saying, hey, I'm doing the math first, right? That's a lot of government employees if that's only 25% of them, and I'm not sure it's hitting us. So, Charlie, what's on your mind?
I never do the math first. That's unheard of. But, no, I think that, look, I understand what he's saying, but I think if you want to get into the issue of how many federal employees there are and the size of the federal government, I mean, that's a very different issue. And, you know, that's certainly a worthwhile one to look at. But, you know, the reality is that I certainly wouldn't want to be the one who is sitting there getting a paycheck today and not knowing, you know, if I might not get another one for a couple of months. I mean, that's just that's just an awful position to put someone in. And particularly because of the fact that if you just peel back how absurd this isn't even about border security, because if you just wanted to do border security, I mean, a wall is about the last way that you would do it.
Right.
It's just not effective.
The Great Wall of China, the notion that we're fighting about a physical structure in a time of drones.
It's very 19th century.
19th century. Yeah. It goes even further back.
Right.
I mean, it's extraordinary. That's really just extraordinary. And I think that the other thing is that, I mean, I don't know, I'm not an expert in this, but how this figures into the chaos on Wall Street, and that could have ripple effects for all of us, which is to say this government and this president, who is now acting effectively unilaterally to disrupt things, has to say something about our country.
All right, so we're going to stay with this disruption thing for just a second longer. The show is Radio Boston, so eventually we got to go local. But very quickly, before we do, I just want to check in. Judge Gertner, I'm actually going to turn to you again quickly. I want to ask you where we are with the Mueller investigation. Where does it stand going into 2019? Because eventually it's going to, you know, be done, and we're going to know something. So where are we?
You want it in the next 2 minutes? just saying. Okay.
So, yeah, I take it you don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, essentially, I think that what Mueller has been doing is what I've described on this program as a storyboard. And there are pieces of the story, and people say, when is the report coming out? Well, to some degree, the indictments provide the storyboard. One part of the story was what Russia did with respect to the hacking and Russia did with respect to the elections.
Mm-hmm.
The other side of the story then are the people who were involved in the Trump campaign, not yet Trump and his immediate family, who we believe are telling Mueller about their relationship to the Russian activities. Cohen, notably, Flynn, Manafort's not clear, but to some degree Manafort. Then there are sort of the people in the middle that arguably could be the glue between those individuals and Russia, which is Roger Stone and Corsi.
And do you think we'll be hearing more about them?
I think we will be hearing more about them. The question about how closely Mueller will be able to draw the link between the Russian disruption on the one hand and the Trump campaign is an open question. We don't know.
Mm-hmm.
All we know is that the Trump campaign was unbelievably sloppy. If we think his governing was sloppy, one can only imagine what the campaign was like, because they didn't think they were going to win.
Exactly.
So that if Mueller has access to emails and comments and interviews, you can imagine that people said things that they should not have said if they really believed they were going to govern. Notably, the Trump Tower meeting in June of 2016, when somebody says, hey, we got great... The Russians have great dirt on Hillary Clinton, and Donald Jr. says, whoopee.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, without even a, oh, my God, what are they getting me into?
They're going to talk about adoption.
Right. So I think you do get a sense that the pace of the investigation has quickened, and you do get a sense that it's drawing closer to Trump, but who knows?
All right.
Do you think it does eventually get to Trump and the family?
I think it gets to the family. Whether it gets to Trump is an interesting question, because if he is as chaotic a decision maker as we now see as president, who knows how much his fingerprints are on this. And then, you know, if I can sort of play law professor for a moment, there's like a whole continuum of I knew about it, I told you to do it, to do whatever you need to do, guys, I want to get elected, to, you know, I sort of know what you're doing, but I'm going to ignore it. And where he is on that continuum, who knows?
All right. Well, I am secretly disappointed that it didn't turn out you had a copy of the findings. Reveal
I'm
them today.
Them.
But
right.
With our 5 minutes or so left together, I do want to get us to some local stuff. And Tom and Charlie, you heard a lot of voices in the montage, right, including lots of national folks, but you heard Elizabeth Warren and you heard Governor Charlie Baker. We were discussing here in the Radio Boston newsroom today about how Massachusetts could kind of be poised to be at the nexus of the divides within both parties in 2019, that might be where we're situated. You know, you've got the 2020 presidential race with Elizabeth Warren, maybe John Kerry, you know, Deval Patrick is out, but we may see some other Dems hopefuls from here. You've got Bernie Sanders in Vermont. Is so much New England good for the Democratic Party in 2020? Tom, let's start with you.
Oh, I think it's great when New England's in running the Democratic Party. And by the way, the big one that we're not paying attention to is Jim McGovern.
So say some more about
that. Right, who's going to take control of Rules Committee.
Uh-huh.
All right, and you remember he
Richie
actually, the last one was Joe Moakley, okay, who ran Rules, and Jim McGovern was his legislative aide, I think, at the time,
mm-hmm.
really his top staffer, went off to run for Congress, was actually called the congressman from South Boston, second congressman from South Boston for a long time, even though he represented Worcester, and he is now poised to take control of it. This is a really powerful committee with the Democrats in charge. Basically, Rules Committee tells you what legislation is going to be listened to and or go to the floor or not go to the floor. And Moakley was a very powerful rep at the time. Massachusetts will have a lot of power as a result of this. I think more than a lot of the showboating you're seeing with people like Seth Moulton, for example, I think this is real substance.
Hmm. All right. Now, so Charlie, that's bodes well for Democrats for one branch of government.
Mm-hmm.
Not a great track record of Massachusetts Democrats in the Oval Office.
Right.
So what does it mean for us there?
I mean, what it means
is
what it's always meant, that I guess with I'm biased with the exception of Paul Tsongas, who I worked for, you know, look, Massachusetts Democrats are basically representative of Massachusetts politics, which is out of kilter with the rest of the country. And so that does not generally turn out well.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think that's the case again. I don't see a lot of Democrats in flyover states, you know, rushing to the polls to vote for Elizabeth Warren.
Well, wait a second. I'm going to disagree. I mean, you know, John Kerry ended up getting the nomination. OK,
yep.
So obviously he was effective enough in terms of being able to capture the flyover states, if you will, the Democrats there. And I have to tell you, Elizabeth Warren, I agree. Elizabeth Warren probably seems to be an extreme of the party. And yet when you look at the field that's shaping up, I can see her having a clear path towards the nomination.
But Tom, winning a nomination in either of these two extreme parties is very different from winning the election.
I agree with you. And it's the election that may be the issue.
And John Kerry failed to win against a guy who had, you know, he looks good now compared to Trump, but had pretty much botched a lot in
George
his first
w.
4 years,
George
W. Bush.
So let's go to the other party, right? Yeah. So we have two parties in Massachusetts that really stand a chance of being at the center of the tensions inside their own extremes, right? And I think, you know, one question that continues to be on our mind with Governor Charlie Baker, this incredibly popular centrist Republican governor, is he a unicorn? Is he an exception?
He's a unicorn.
Or is he where the party's going to need to go? What are we learning from him, if anything?
I vote for unicorn. Are we taking a vote on that?
I have no idea why he is even a Republican.
Yeah, no,
well,
I think that's right.
I'll tell you what, here's why he's a unicorn, now the Republican Party doesn't matter in Massachusetts, but if it did, this would be a very big deal. I find it astonishing that Charlie Baker won, percentage-wise, won by a larger percentage against Jay Gonzalez than he did against Scott Lively. The fact that even in Massachusetts, this sort of virulent Trump wing
mm-hmm.
Is really rising up. It's really remarkable.
But it's not just that he's a moderate. I mean, this is going to be a problem for moderates on the right and on the left, which is that if you're talking about the middle at a time when there are extremist progressives on the one hand and Trumpites on the other, it's not clear where their role will be.
And
so it doesn't matter whether Republican or Democrat.
And it's going to stay that way until we fix redistricting.
All right. Now,
that's true.
Now, Tom, you're basically like I call foul. Guy's not even a Republican, right? So where, if anywhere, do lessons from the state Republican Party in Massachusetts teach us about the larger country? Or are we just so different that you can't extrapolate?
Well, I wouldn't say the state Republican Party, but I would say Charlie Baker. I would certainly hold him and a couple of other governors across the nation up mm-hmm. as examples of how a kind of a belief that government can matter in the lives of people and should matter in the lives of people, coupled with a sense of restraint about the actions of government versus taxing and so on, can really produce genuinely solid results.
Mm-hmm.
And that my hope would be, and I'm not sure it will happen, but my hope would be that other states look at the example, say, of Massachusetts and say, yeah, this is the good way to run your state. I mean, and you got to look at terms of how we're doing from on the economy and education and so on. We're doing really well compared to everybody else.
So there's value in good government. And we
value in good government.
All right. All right. So 2018 is walking out the door and 2019 standing there ready to come in. So on our last note here, it is crystal ball time. What do you got for 2019? What are you seeing in your crystal balls? Anyone?
Well, I guess one thing I would say is that with what I've seen, this is going back to national, but what I've seen recently with this whole Syria decision out of the blue, the increasing the pace at which people are leaving this administration, I really think we're seeing Trump's madness is really going to just accelerate. I really feel like he is
right.
less in control of himself with every passing day.
Judge Gertner,
no, I think that nationally, I do believe I'm one of the people who do believe that Trump is not going to make it to the end of his term. That essentially he's going to do something so bizarro that even the Republicans will abandon him, or he'll resign, or something like that, or the content of the Mueller report will be devastating, because I think he's now feeling his oats, and that is dangerous. On the side of the Massachusetts, I have to admit I want to part company on Charlie Baker. Baker's position on criminal justice matters is now out of step even with the National Republican Party, so much so that with respect to his criticisms of judges, he begins to sound just like, dare I say it, Trump light. So he's going to have some problems walking the line that you're describing.
All right, yeah. Tom, you've got the last word.
So my crystal ball is that a year from now we're going to be saying, wow, that was a crazy year, Donald Trump, and he's still here.
All right. Well, with dangerous oats and still being here, that was our panel for this afternoon. Thanks so much. Judge Nancy Gertner, thanks for joining us today. Tom Keene, Charlie Chippio, please, thanks for being here in the studio.
Thank you. Pleasure.
Hey, everyone, stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Tiziana Deering, and this is Radio Boston.